Hello all, and welcome to episode 30 of The Lair of Lore. I'm Steven.
And I'm Miriam.
And I'm going to apologize immediately for anyone who's actually here because we were on the front page of Wizards last week, because this is only tangentially a magic episode.
Half of it. Half of it is a magic episode.
It probably won't be half.
Okay, we'll be generous. Let's go with a generous third.
So, we looked at the story cards and realized that we are not going to be able to cover all of these, the story bits that we have, basically, already, since, one, they're planning on doing 12 for Dominaria?
Yeah.
Which still seems insane to me, because they usually do 10 for a two-set block?
Mm-hmm.
So this is a lot?
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're also only on number 5. And
we like to have a little bit more... What is it? In the past, when we've done the stories, we've liked to have almost all of them out or most of them out.
Yeah, I was also just going to say, I'm out of town next week, so we're afraid that if we try and cover any amount of them this week, that we won't be able to cover all of them, and then we won't be able to record the week after that.
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks after that, Miriam's out of town, so it's like a it's a multi-level issue. Let's call it that.
Yes.
So instead, we're going to cover the story spotlight cards and sort of what they say about the story, along with a couple of things that we sort of noticed while doing our pre-show discussion. And then we're going to do one of those things that we have been, I was going to say tacitly threatening to do, but no, we've been actively threatening to do this for a while now, which is a totally non-magic related episode, because we like stuff that isn't just magic. So, so yeah, we're going to go over the story spotlight cards in what we're relatively certain is the order, since they don't call... So they used to do this in a way where the story articles would, frankly, have already wrapped up by this point. So when they reveal the story spotlight cards, they would be revealed when that story went up, so you knew what order they were in, and there was, like, information about them. Not this time. So we're just sort of having to try and figure it out. The only one that we're not 100% sure about the order for is Broken Bond, so we're assuming it's number one.
Yeah. It's... Yes, they're numbered. That's fine.
Are they numbered?
Yeah, like one of four, two of four, three of four.
Oh, then that's
four,
totally the right order, then.
Yeah,
okay,
they're numbered.
Totally guessed.
Yeah, because this was something... So when I was scrolling through the cards kind of this weekend, doing a little bit of episode prep, I was like, wait a second. Broken Bond, that's Nyssa.
Yeah.
Nyssa, where are you going, hon?
I love how, because it's a common, we didn't even look at it last time.
Yeah, because we like to do commons, we like to do our uncommons and rares and legendaries.
We don't even do uncommons that much. We just did uncommons this set because, there are legendary uncommons.
Yes, and it's like, wait. Where are you going, Nyssa?
Yeah, so
Broken
Bond for one generic and a green is a sorcery. Destroy target artifact or enchantment. You have to put a land card from your hand onto the battlefield. I can't bear to see another... I hate reading this one. I can't bear to see another plane broken before I make my home whole. I'm sorry, but my watch is over. Okay, I'm still confused about this for a couple of different reasons. Her plane is basically fixed. Like, the plane is fixed. The people are recovering from destroying a plane, the Eldrazi, but that's not an issue with the plane. Like, everything that we know is, yeah, we destroyed both the Eldrazi that were there.
So what's wrong? And I don't know. Maybe it's with how Nyssa is very, very much in tune with the land. She's like, until it is back to normal as how it used to be, I can't do this anymore, guys.
But we've never gotten the impression that she's in tune with, like, Zendikar while she's not on Zendikar. Like, she's usually interacting with ley lines and things on the plane that she's on.
Yeah. Like, Kaladesh was a good... The story is from Kaladesh, where she was interacting with the Aetherborn and was like, yeah, this is kind of weird. I like how you guys have it here, but this is not how home is like.
Well, to
with
be fair,
trying to figure out their lanes.
She doesn't even... Like, ley lines don't work on her home plane.
Yeah.
Like, half of the issue with her home plane is that, well, someone imprisoned these great monstrous demon or the eldritch horrors inside our plane, and it broke mm-hmm. our ley lines and our mana. So we have a continuous everstorm circling the entire world, constantly reshaping it. Like, your land wasn't good to start with.
I don't know. She's done, though. She is like, peace out, y'all. I'm going home.
Yeah, I'm just a little bit confused by it, because this is a strange character in that she had basically no character when this was all started, because her original character was being a naive elf racist, and completely ignorant to what a vampire was, despite growing up on a plane where there were vampires. And then continuing to be naive pretty much until they retconned her story so that she was just sort of like, well, no, they retconned her story so that she was more naive and less racist, but it was weird.
I mean, since this is, it's the first story spotlight card, I figure they're going to at least get to it in the first episode or in the first story.
And to be fair, we have not read any of them yet because we are continuing our policy of, let's see how much of the story we can figure out without having to read the story spotlights, because let's face it, most folks aren't going to read the story spotlights.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see what we can pick up. Or not the story spotlights, sorry, these story articles.
Yeah. They're fun, they're cool, sometimes they're actually quite good.
Yeah.
But the rest of the time, they're deeply frustrating and rage-inducing.
To be fair, even good things can be deeply frustrating and rage-inducing.
Yeah.
That is Broken Bond. Apparently, Nissa is leaving. And now all the other three basically lean into what I guess is the real story for Dominaria,
mm-hmm.
which is that Liliana is, I'm going to charitably say it looks like she's going off the rails, and then someone picked her up and put them on their rails?
Yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, some of this we could, I don't know if we called, but we sort of saw coming a bit because of how she was shown and highlighted in,
Ixalan?
Yeah, in Ixalan. Like, a frankly significant amount of the Ixalan story articles, at least, had to do with Liliana, which was especially impressive since she was not there.
Nope. We saw Liliana through Jace and through what Vraska saw when Jace freaked out.
Yeah, it was through Jace, and then we saw it through Vraska's eyes without Jace's, like, personal attachment to it clouding the ideas.
Yeah.
Which, so basically, like, Jace's way of looking at it was sort of like, okay, that's a little clingy of you, Jace. And when we got to see it through Vraska's eyes, it was very much just like, oh, she's just been, like, screwing with him for years.
It has a lot of hallmarks of the classic abusive relationship, and Jace is like, it's okay, she's just a little nuts. It's very, you've been abused and conditioned to be, like, okay with the amount of crap. See, I almost said...
I know.
I censored myself.
You did.
Yeah. The amount of crap that he's had to deal with.
So do you want to take the first step off the rails that she takes?
Yeah. So this next card is Final Parting. It is a sorcery for 3 generic and 2 black. And the flavor text for this one, sleep now, brother. That is the one gift I can give you. And she's already had to kill her brother once. That's
to be fair, the first time was an accident. I believe what actually gave her spark was when she used someone else's, or someone like gave her a spell or something to try and bring him back, and it was black based, not white based. So it's like, yeah, he's back as a zombie. Good job.
Yep. So she then had to put him back in the ground, where he got brought back as a Lich Knight, which you see in Jasu Vest's Lich Knight.
Well, she brought him back, and her spark ignited, and she just left and never came back.
Yeah. So he's a Lich Knight. For the Cabal, I think?
Cabal.
Cabal. I can never, that word is always a...
Yeah,
how many A's?
Three. So the Cabal have been around for a very long time and were always one of the, like, black-aligned factions.
Yeah.
In earlier Dominaria, they were usually famous for self-sacrifice mechanics, cleric matters mechanics, and thralls, which were sort of, like, weird, creepy, genetic magic slave beasts that they created. Now, they serve Belzenlok.
Yeah.
It seems... So, I think we already talked about how it looks like Belzenlok is basically going out of his way to try and... I mean, as much as I gave WotC crap for retconning Nissa's story, it looks like Belzenlok is trying to retcon pretty much all of Dominaria's history into saying, like, hey, I'm an elder demon. I did a bunch of that evil stuff.
Oh, wait. Belzenlok is one of the people who holds her contract.
Yes.
For some reason, I was like, I wonder who that is. If Belzenlok is part of one of the demons.
Yes,
and
he is. In fact, he's the only one who is left alive at the start of Dominaria.
Yeah.
And now he's dead, because that's what settle the score is.
Yep.
Two generic and two black. Settle the score is an uncommon sorcery. Exile target creature, put two loyalty counters on a planeswalker you control. You are... You bound me with a contract only your death could end, and you thought me the fool? So kills her brother, who's basically Belzenlok's lieutenant. She kills the mini-boss, and then goes, well, the big boss is right there, so let's deal with him too. Why not?
And, good for you, I guess.
Oh, God.
But that doesn't seem to go so well.
Sorry, I just noticed that there's, like, a line right... I don't know if this will show up properly for you, since you're seeing me on a different camera, but there's, like, a line that's going right down here that's blue.
I see that.
Yeah, because there's a light from one of the freaking windows that apparently isn't closed all the way, and I thought it was my webcam or something.
Nope, it's like you have this, like, little, little tiny stripe of light.
Yeah, it's because Haley moved the blinds so that the cat could stand on the windowsill, so... But yes, so the final one.
Yes, which is... if I can find where it is. In Bolas' Clutches! Yeah, that didn't go so well, apparently.
Yeah.
So, this is a 4 generic, 2 blue, legendary enchantment aura. Enchant permanent. You control enchanted permanent. Enchanted permanent is legendary. Your contract... is in default. You belong to me now. Serve or die. Nicol Bolas.
So, it's a
mind control matter
effect.
Doesn't matter that she killed all four demons. Doesn't matter.
I don't think it's not so much that it doesn't matter, it's that... So, Nicol Bolas is the one that helped her set up this contract when she was very young and much stupider.
Yes.
And... apparently, because she didn't pay very close attention to the contract beyond that, okay, well, if I ever can get strong enough to kill these demons, I can break myself out of it. It looks like, in the same way that, you defaulted on your loan, it's not just, well, I guess nothing happens then, or, well, I blew up the bank, so obviously they can't claim my money now. It's, there's a higher power that the contract had to be ordered by, and in this case, it appears to have been Bolas. So he set up her contract with the explicit purpose of, worst case, I control four demon lords who control a planeswalker. Best case, I control one planeswalker who has made themselves powerful enough to murder four demon lords. And now I own her entirely.
Yep.
Yeah, that's concerning.
Yeah, I mean, Liliana's, like... I feel like when she joined the Gatewatch, it was just, like, a fine, okay, I'll join the Gatewatch kind of thing.
Yeah, it was very much a, like, I don't...
I have nothing better to do at the moment.
I don't think it was that. I think it was realizing that, okay, I have sort of claimed Innistrad as my de facto home, and if I don't do this, I'm gonna have to go move all my stuff. And I don't want to move all my stuff. And...
Yep.
Slightly more immediately, I think she was also realizing that, oh, and the chain veil might be kind of consuming me a little bit right now.
Yep.
She hasn't put it on since, has she?
I don't think she has.
That just occurred to me. I know we haven't seen mm-hmm. any art with her wearing it, but they also stopped. They didn't show any art with her wearing it when yeah. she used it on Innistrad, so I don't know.
I mean, I kind of didn't pay as much attention to Amonkhet.
I should go back to Hour of Devastation and see if there was anything about her putting it on to fight Bullis, but I don't know.
Maybe just catch up so there's not as much of a hole in the story for my brain, where it's like, yeah, they got their butts kicked.
Yeah.
They went home, licking their wounds, kind of scenario. Which is, like, oversimplification.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I mean, oversimplification. Effectively, Bullis has an army that he can move across planes now.
Yes.
I still am deeply confused, but... So, there's a thing where only planeswalkers can planeswalk, but there's, I want to say it's called plane shifting, that mm-hmm. the like, planar portal that whoever it was, I've forgotten their name on Kaladesh.
Kaladesh.
Yeah. I can't remember the inventor's name, but... The whole thing about the Kaladesh block was basically Bullis trying to get the planar gate. And no one seems to be paying attention to that the Weatherlight can also do that. And mm-hmm. the Weatherlight is, like, a big part of this story. Admittedly, it can also only carry, like, just a ship's worth of people. But it feels like it would have been easier for Bullis to just go, like... Hey, someone go bring me that Weatherlight so we can figure out how it works and reverse engineer it. Not
yeah.
wait patiently for someone on a plane that no one has ever heard of to figure out how to make one and hope it still works everywhere else when it has to be powered by Aether.
Yes. So there is something that I noticed mm-hmm. That I think might be... Okay, so if you go down to Legendary Artifacts and look up Thran Temporal Gateway... This is something that I think was announced this past week.
I mean, we are... So, to be clear, we are recording this on Monday the 16th, which means we have yes. the full card image gallery. So, on Friday, yes. the whole gallery went live.
Yeah. So, I noticed this. Again, yes. this was... So, is this a portal that has existed on Dominaria, or is this the one that they brought in from Kaladesh? Because this doesn't
no, no, no,
look
no, no,
like
no, no,
one
no.
they brought in from
Miriam,
Kaladesh.
Miriam. Temporal. Yes. And Thran.
So
Thran were on Dominaria before anyone else, and Temporal
okay,
is time, not planar.
Yes, so I am correct then.
Yeah, this is an entirely different thing. The planar gate also had like the crazy Kaladeshi filigree,
yes.
and if I remember correctly, it's like a half circle or like a half oval, and the other side is open.
Planar portal, looking it up just in case.
There's not a card for it. I don't believe there's a card for it, unless I've entirely
nope,
forgotten.
I'm just trying to see if I can find any art. Oh, planar bridge is what it is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was it.
Yeah, there is. That is definitely not. That is, that's very...
You... oh, planar bridge did have a card. Oh,
yeah.
Sorry, I knew this wasn't, like... hole, but I couldn't remember where the split in it was, and now I just need to find mm-hmm. an image that doesn't look like butts.
Yeah, and it was just one of those, like, is this something that is gonna be... They're gonna possibly use the Thran Temporal Gateway, but if it's time versus planar, then never mind.
Yeah.
So.
People on Dominaria have plenty of other ways to get to... Well, they don't actually anymore, but they used to have plenty of other ways to get to other planes, at least compared to...
Yeah.
Every other plane is just like, no, we are totally unique and alone in the entire world. Dominaria is just like, yeah, we're aware of the other planes and they all kind of suck. And a bunch of them have invaded us, and by extension, we probably have the tech to invade them now. But we've also suffered, like, 4 apocalypses.
So this is also going to answer something you just mentioned before. Mm-hmm. There's an artifact called Navigator's Compass with the flavor text, the Weatherlight can no longer plane shift, but it can traverse Dominaria with ease.
Oh.
So they can't use the Weatherlight for that.
I assume that had something to do with the mending, because I don't know the full story of the mending all that well.
Yeah.
So it probably happened then.
Yeah, so he turns out he can't use the Weatherlight for that.
Well, it also probably would have been very difficult for him to get it, but...
Mm-hmm.
So there is one thing we did notice, which is that apparently something is going to happen to Teferi, and we don't think we know what it is yet. because there is a very distinct difference between Teferi and some of these arts.
Yes.
Specifically, I wanted to do Weight of Memory just because you can see him more clearly.
Yes.
So with Weight of Memory, you can tell that Teferi has been not having the best time.
Nope.
He's, like, his clothing isn't particularly disheveled, but it's by no means, like, clean or nice or pressed.
Yeah.
He's let his hair and his beard and his kind of everything just sort of grow crazy.
It's a little scraggly.
Honestly, kind of makes sense. He's been stranded on a plane that he knows well, but the entire area that he's from is probably lost forever.
Yep.
And then something is apparently going to happen before he makes his oath, because with his oath, he's like, I don't want to say clean-shaven, but it's like he's better.
He is crisp.
Yeah, he's crisp. Like, he's like shaved off the crazy insane
hair and beard.
Yeah, beard and hair, and he's like, his clothes are much more like presentable.
Mm-hmm.
And even like
he
the
looks
staff,
like he's got his groove back.
Yeah, even the staff looks less like run down.
Yeah, because in the card opt, he still looks kind of scraggly.
Yeah, opt is basically just like one, even this, like, so with Oath of Teferi, even the staff is just like shiny and nice, but when in opt, he's just like, like, actually, in opt, you can see what older Teferi, or what younger Teferi looked like, and which ultimately looks a hell of a lot like Oath of Teferi.
Yeah, he looks like there's a big difference.
Yeah. But that's
maybe Teferi is getting his groove back? That's
I don't know. I think it's more of just that something has given him motivation. I don't...
Mm-hmm.
I hope it's not just the Gatewatch showing up and going, hey, you want to join the Gatewatch? And go like, that sounds awesome! I'm hoping that it will actually be something, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, clearly something has changed for him that helps.
Yeah, because Oath of Teferi and Teferi and the Planeswalker card Teferi, Hero of Dominaria, is a massive change.
Is that the one from the Planeswalker decks, or is that the real one?
So there's Oath of Teferi, which is
No, Miriam.
Hmm.
The Planes... Okay, so yes, this Planeswalker.
Yeah.
So remember that there are eight?
That's right.
Yeah,
the
eight
Planeswalker
cards,
decks.
Yeah, that aren't actually in the set, but are still in Standard.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what... I don't even know which Planeswalkers they are, honestly, because I care very little about them. I'm going to go look and check and see what they are right now, because why not? Archives. Where would they have announced this? In a sane, normal, human way?
Mm-hmm.
Wait, I said sane, normal, and human. What the hell? Okay. So the other ones, it's a Teferi who doesn't... Honestly, he doesn't look like either Teferi. He looks like maybe a middle ground. And another Chandra. So, meh.
Okay.
Whatever. I don't honestly care what they do, because they're Planeswalker decks. They're not that great.
Yep.
So, our like main topic, which we did not discuss because we are dumb.
That's okay. It was one of those like, there's supposed to be 12 of these stories. Do we actually want to do this tomorrow?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So our main topic is that thing that, like I said, we've been threatening to do, which is to talk about other worlds besides just Magic, because we love storytelling, but that doesn't always lead well for Magic, and it doesn't mean that we'll always have something to talk about with Magic.
Correct.
So, what we were going to talk about is basically what I'm going to charitably describe as jumping face first directly into the Cosmere.
Yes.
So, basic idea. You know how there's the Magic multiverse? Well, other people have had the same idea, and the Cosmere is the... vaguely insane brainchild of Brandon Sanderson.
Mm-hmm.
Long and short of it is that he wanted to create a expansive multiverse that all would follow some set of rules, but wherein he could set stories on individual parts of the multiverse that you didn't feel like you had to go read every other book to get any sort of interaction with. Like, you could go read one of them and go, that was intriguing, and follow through with the story of that world. And if you were paying attention and knew what to look for, there might be some call-outs to other stuff in his expanded universe, but you didn't need to know.
Yeah, and that's actually kind of refreshing, is where sometimes with these massive fantasy epics, you're just like, oh god, there's so many books, where do I start?
Well, the way he usually directed it was that, I don't remember where I saw this, but it was basically like trying to do comics, where you have this massive expanded universe where, yeah, these characters have interacted and done these things in the past, but you feel like you have to go back and try and understand a whole lot of backlog and extraneous information if you want to just jump into any given comic character that isn't set in random alternate world of the day that has its own rules and laws. So, essentially, hang on, I just noticed that my camera is mirrored, so I'm trying to fix it because it doesn't matter for this.
So many things are being weird today technologically.
Well, I mirror it for a bunch of streams, but because I've got the layer of lore right behind me, I was like, oh, that's mirrored. That doesn't actually look like a word. Let's fix that.
Yes.
So yeah, we are going to look at, I believe it was technically the third Cosmere thing, but the first two are very is it the first two? I think the first two are very early steps into it, and were like the first things he got published.
Yeah.
So we are looking at Mistborn. This, if you're not aware of, is at least the three books that we're going to be talking about today are a three-book trilogy that is, I don't want to say steampunky, because it's very much just like, it's like medieval tech, basically, right?
Yeah, it's kind of, I'm trying to think of a good way to describe it. It's got elements of medieval tech, but it's not quite so medieval.
Yeah, so
it's almost like 16th centuries.
I was going to say that it like technologically it feels Dark Ages. Like their most advanced thing is a crossbow.
Mm-hmm.
But societally, it's kind of...
Yeah, like, that's the thing that's, like, confusing. Is
societally, like it's kind of like early 1900s.
Yeah, yeah. I would go so far as to be... I would go so far as to say that, but...
Yeah, like, it's... So, it I want to say early 1900s because there are still significant issues, but... and they are mostly racial issues, but they're separated enough that the ruling body can largely ignore them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's trying to place them. These series are a little weird because he combines a lot of elements of different times.
Yeah. Like I think when we hit the end of the first or get into the second book, they start mentioning that, in fact, a lot of technology was developed and just sort of got shunted to the side or suppressed, and some of the only technology that was allowed to develop were things that, for, like, food preservation, like canning, is considered a really new and unique technology.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of 18th century.
Yeah. So basic idea is that we have a world that is, like... Maybe even the 1900s is a little bit wrong, because they were effectively slaves, so probably, like, just pre-Civil War, because there are two races. You've got the Ska, and the... I think they are just generally referred to as the Nobles, right?
Yes. Well, kind of three races, because the Terrace, the Ska, and the Nobles.
Yeah, it's sort of implied that there are others, too, but yeah.
Yeah.
So, basic idea...
Those are the three main groups that you want to care about.
The Ska range from being plantation Ska, where they work on these plantations growing really, really ineffective plants that you need tons and tons and tons of to produce food or to produce any sort of, like, clothing or linens or anything.
Yes.
And then you have the nobles, who are
just that, yeah, like, they, ruling body of society.
Yeah, they are all descended from the, how did they call it, the friends and loyal allies of the Lord Ruler.
Who is this Emperor God.
Yes. Miri mentioned the Terrace. The Terrace are... they're even more indentured. They're going to be their own thing that we'll have to talk about separately because they're weird. But yes, basically you have this
they're
world
the servant class, essentially.
Sort of,
they're
yeah.
the servant class.
They're high class servants. So yes. Like, if you have a Terrace servant, that's like a mark in your honor.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, this entire world is ruled over by the Lord Ruler, a seemingly immortal deity who did something about 1,000 years ago and seized power.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's heard stories about, like, when he was seizing power across the world and there were rebellions and things, and
mm-hmm.
Terrible, terrible things, that, like, people trying to kill the Lord Ruler in magnificent ways that never worked. Like, at one point, I think there was a description of someone soaked the building he had been sleeping in something flammable, then set it on fire, and his skeleton walked out and began regrowing flesh as he walked over and stabbed the man.
Yeah. He has set himself up at this as this immortal deity ruler.
I believe...
kind of.
Is it in this one where they start calling him the Sliver of Heaven?
I don't know if it is in this one.
I feel like they call him something like the Divinity or the Sliver of Heaven or Slice of the Divine or something like that.
Well, they also introduce the fact that the main religion of this world is based around the Lord Ruler as your God King.
It's also... It has weird flavors of... if anyone's familiar with Warhammer 40,000, it has weird, weird reflections of the Ecclesiarchy in it as well, because the whole idea is that there's this religion built up around the Lord Ruler, because he's basically God... and he mm-hmm. won't die, and we might as well just sort of listen to him, because he can kill anyone he wants and he'll still be alive and fine.
Yes.
So he has set up this religion that is tied into every sort of, like, business element of the world.
Yeah.
What are they called? I've forgotten their name. The...
the priests?
Yeah.
Oh, they're the...
It's ob something.
Obligators.
Obligators, yeah. So obligators. Basically, he's got these obligators who function in largely the same way that you could have a judge or a lawyer. They show up
They're
to,
like notaries, too.
Yeah, they basically range from every sort of, like, civil thing who needs to be there to document that something has actually truly taken place.
Yep.
Like, they show up, like, they're invited to all of the noble parties, because the nobles will just casually make, deals with each other, and they're so conditioned that they make a deal, and they're just like, obligator, come over here and, like, witness this deal, and then you tip them.
Yeah. So there's a couple different branches of that. There's, I think so far there are the four branches of the, so the overarching, it's the Steel Ministry.
Yeah, the Steel Ministry is the full-on government, but there are different aspects to it, yeah.
So the Canton of Inquisition, which is, like, the police force.
Which should have its own thing, because they're also weird.
And terrifying.
Gets into the magic system, which is part of why we really like this world.
Mm-hmm. The Canton of Orthodoxy, which is, like, organizational, probably governmental bureaucracy.
Sort of. That one also has to do with stuff like... it's illegal for nobles to crossbreed with Ska.
Which is, like, the slave race.
Yeah. Well, they're sort of slave... that's why I was trying to say, like...
it's, like, it's almost indentured servitude?
Yeah, because, yeah, some of them are totally slaves. Some of them are city Ska, which is to say that they're, like, merchants or... usually not merchants, sorry. They're usually, like, craftsmen who do something that mm-hmm. the nobles won't do because it's working with their hands. But are good enough at it that you can't just not pay them. So they amount to sort of a class of freed slave, but not quite.
It makes me think of Industrial Revolution type.
Yeah, industrial
class.
Sort of, yeah. Like beginnings of a middle class.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Canton of Orthodoxy is also in charge of not necessarily making sure that nobles don't sleep with Ska, but making sure that they are very, very good about hiding the fact that they did it and making sure that no children survive.
Yes.
They're not actually that good at it, but we'll get to that.
So there's also the Canton of Resource, which is taxation, and the Canton of Finance, which I'm assuming also kind of has to tie into.
I think that resource isn't taxation. Resource is like, you have this product, and this product needs to go here.
Yeah.
Yeah. That general sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it almost makes me think of like Department of Agriculture type stuff.
Probably.
But like a bunch of like different small committee branches that keep things running.
It's probably a lot of like, okay, you all have not grown enough of X food supply item. You need to get more of that or there are going to be issues.
Yeah.
Or you all are not completing your transportation contracts or something like that. Which is another thing to say is that this world also is entirely screwed over on transportation.
Yes.
Because as you get to explore more and more of this world, it becomes really clear that something is really wrong with it, because they
should be further along in their
they should be further along, because they're talking about how, the Lord Ruler has literally ruled for very nearly 1,000 years with pretty much nothing changing since he started.
Mm-hmm.
But
fashions are the same.
They've changed a bit, but in ways that would be sort of spoilery.
Yeah.
But there's like, the way that everything gets around is on canal boats, except that none of the canals flow. They're all basically just like standing water, because the entire area that humans, or that Ska, which are, they're basically humans, live in is pretty much level. So they have these massive boats that are then dragged up and down canals by armies of Ska.
Yep.
Because that's the most efficient way they have to get stuff around.
And I mean, they do have horses and carriages and things like that, but that's only the very, very wealthy have access to them.
Yeah.
I just want to point out, just so this is established, this world is super detailed.
Yes.
Like
this is a running theme with any Brandon Sanderson book. It's less so with his first two, but when he gets to revisit them in later collections, you get a lot more to them. But yeah, there are a lot of details that we definitely won't be able to get into, like the fact that, okay, we're going to start entering spoiler territory. I'm warning you that right now. We are starting to enter spoiler territory. So if you have not read Mistborn,
Hero of Ages, Well of Ascension,
Well of Ascension,
and
Hero of Ages. Yeah, I was trying to remember. It's like, okay, I know it's Hero of Ages is the last one. What's the middle one?
Well of Ascension.
Yeah. So if you have not read these and have any intention to and want to go in as spoiler-free as possible, now is your time to turn off.
Because this is what we're going to talk about.
We will continue trying to not spoil stuff, but we can't guarantee that we won't do something by accident, so I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Or hint.
Yeah, or hint. And we might count different things as spoilers than you will, so I'm sorry.
Yes.
So yes.
You have been warned.
You have been warned. So... there's a whole thing, I think we don't even start to see this basically until like the third book, where it becomes clear that this planet is really screwed up, and in fact is so screwed up that when someone was trying to fix the planet because there was an issue wracking it, they moved it close to the sun to try and burn away this mist that was causing the issue, and then that caused yet more issues, and they went, oh god, and moved it... I think they ended up moving it too far away then, and in order to keep the planet from basically freezing, they ended up having to create volcanoes all over the planet. And...
But it was still too close to the sun even in the first place. It was too close to the sun even still.
Yeah. So, there were a lot of weird issues that were... Because there was a... thing that was wrong with the planet, but not what everyone thought it was, and the person who tried to fix it did it without knowledge of a whole lot of stuff, so ended up creating an entirely new set of issues, which again, they managed to sort of shoehorn fixes in, but not necessarily great fixes.
Yeah.
But yeah,
that's probably as vague as we can be about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so let's get into...
I'm itching to like jump into detail, but I know that's spoilery.
So let's get into the magic system, because the magic system is pretty much what you've come to a Brandon Sanderson world for. The
dude it's so cool!
Has, every single world that Brandon Sanderson has made has a unique magic system where he basically... It looks like he goes in from the start and goes, here are the rules that I'm setting down. What can people do with these rules that I have already set down?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I will talk about this briefly, but he has another book that's just the Cosmere Collection. It's basically a bunch of short stories set on worlds that either appear in books or some of them don't appear in the books. Because one of them that I think I've talked about on an Extra Bits, I want to say.
Possibly.
Is a, like, relatively short story about a another planet in the Cosmere whose magic system is entirely based on birds.
Yes.
Because,
yes, you were telling me about this.
Yeah, well, it's sort of based on birds and, like, D&D-style psionics, where a whole bunch of things on this planet hunt by tracking thoughts. And there are a whole bunch of birds that... because they grow up around these things that track thoughts, have had to figure out different ways to get around that. And everyone, like, the magic system is basically built around, you put a bird on your shoulder, and whatever that bird does, if the bird likes you enough, it will help, it will give you whatever ability it has. So, like, the most common one is just, it silences your mind so the things that hunt that way can't find you.
Yes.
Like, yeah. His magic systems are always really, really good.
And I think for I think we can say for both of us, if you've listened to this podcast long for a decent enough time, we like structured magic.
We do. So we like structured magic where you don't spend the first, like, chapter or three of your book going, like, here's how magic works.
Yeah.
With Mistborn, the main character basically spends a fairly significant amount of the... like, first couple chapters, not understanding that they're using the magic system, because they just have this idea in their head that they have this resource that they just call luck. And they don't understand how it works, and they don't understand how they get more of it. They just understand that if I
concentrate on it.
Yeah, I can do some things, but they're doing it at a very, like, low level. So the basic idea for the magic... for all magic on Skadrail, which is the name of this planet. Sorry, I keep trying to say plane. it's all based on metal. Every single... there are three different magic systems. They are all based on metal.
And you use them different ways.
Yes. So basic one is allomancy, which we'll go into more detail on each of them individually.
Yes.
The second one is ferrochemy. You'll notice that every single one of these has a reference to, like, alchemy or mancy, which is the, like, throw onto the end of anything to make it into a word, and usually a reference to metal. And finally, hemallergy. Yeah, hemallergy we'll cover last because it's unique. Basically, each book focuses in on one of these individually.
And it kind of ties it all together as you're learning about them a little bit more
so we'll try
character learns about it.
We'll try and not go into too much detail for any individual part of each of these systems, but we'll probably cover some.
Yeah.
So the basic idea is that each one of these draws power in different ways. That was loud.
We're going to start with allomancy.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
So... there are 16 metals as it develops in the series. There are going to be 16 key metals that do different things depending on you can use allomancy, ferrochemy, or hemallergy.
Let's clarify. There are 18.
excuse me. I'm still at the point where it's 16.
They establish very early on that at the very beginning, there are 10. And it becomes more and more clear that 16 is a number that recurs abnormally often in Skadrail.
Like, patterns.
Yeah, in natural things in Skadrail. So they eventually figure out that, okay, there are... they start to assume, okay, so there's 16 metals and some of them are hidden or some of them aren't that useful for reasons that we'll explain.
Yeah.
But... eventually, what it basically comes down to is that they establish that there are 16 and two god metals. Which actually means that there are four. So when we say there's 16, there's eight, and each of them has an alloy that also works. So
yes.
Iron and steel. So technically they're both mm-hmm. iron. Iron is pulling.
Mm-hmm.
So each one of them is they're grouped in ways that I don't recall, but each one of them is one of them will be a pulling and one of them will be a pushing, and I think usually the pushing is the alloy.
Yeah, I think so.
So with iron and steel, if you are an iron misting, which is someone who can just burn iron, you ingest a little bit of iron. Usually they carry them in little like flasks full of alcohol.
Just a liquid, yeah. Or like a liquid, so that's not going to corrode the metal.
It's usually alcohol so that it doesn't corrode, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So like they just carry flakes of iron in flasks and down it, and then they basically treat it. They act. They say that they basically have like a reserve of power that they can
mm-hmm.
feel as part of them.
Yeah, and you feel the metal in your body.
Functionally, what they're basically doing is that they are burning the metal out of their bodies, and they have to do it basically before the stomach acid gets to it as well.
Yeah, because overnight, the acid will digest it or get rid of it.
So they burn. Effectively, what they're basically doing is siphoning the metal off somewhere else and trading it for whatever power it is that they're doing. And mm-hmm. Iron is the pulling metal. So basically, when you're burning iron, you can see what amount to, like, blue lines that trace out to mm-hmm. all of the sources of metal within a certain radius of you, depending on how comfortable and used to it you are.
Mm-hmm.
And you can pull any of them towards you. Or, if they are heavier than you, you will get pulled towards them!
Yes.
It's all of the iron ones are based on your weight, so effectively you end up with this case of like, okay, there's a nail over there, I can pull it towards me. And you can sort of modulate how fast you're pulling it.
Mm-hmm.
And as a rule, they get pulled towards center of mass, so people who can only burn iron tend to be called lurchers, and will, like, wear big, bulky armor plates on their chests, and will function as basically like a defensive line.
What yeah.
What the fuck is that?
Because they can... What?
Someone's
what is
like
what?
Beating on my door, except not my door. It's weird.
Interesting.
And they're only doing it when I have headphones on.
Of course.
Yeah, do you want to describe steel then, while I go and figure out what the heck is going on with my door?
So steel is the opposite of iron. It's the alloy of it. And with steel, you are pushing against the metal instead of pulling the metal towards you. So you still see all of the allomantic lines, but those who can use steel allomancy are called coin shots, because there is a way that you can, if you can use steel, you can burn steel, you can use coins to travel, because what you're going to do is you drop the coin and then you use your allomantic ability with steel to push off the coin to move you forwards.
I assume and you up. Also talked about them being, like, offensive?
Yes, this is definitely more of an... I actually hadn't. It's definitely more of an offensive ability.
Yeah, generally, steel mistings are referred to as coin shots, because they can also just carry a curse, their coin purse and throw out the coins and push them at things at relatively fast speeds.
So you can, besides being able to travel with it, you can basically shoot small pieces of metal out. Basically, if it's a metal that you can use, you can shoot small pieces of metal at things, anyone. Like in battle, you can like literally just send coins through people's bodies if you have enough strength and.
Some people are stronger with it than others, but mm-hmm. in general, usually people aren't able to like fully penetrate someone, but enough to basically use it like
it would
an arrow.
Hurt.
Yeah,
it would hurt.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be just coins. It's any metal that, or the only one that doesn't react is aluminum.
Yeah,
but that's
anything made with aluminum or silver.
Yeah, they're not reactive metals. You can't use them. But anything else is fair game.
So let's do a quick run-through of the metals, if not necessarily what they do. So there's copper and bronze are the...
Mental.
Are they mental?
They're mental.
Right. Okay,
I have the table up. Do you want me to send you the table?
Yes. Can you send me both all? There should be actually three, but at least the two big important ones.
I have the allomantic table
okay,
up right
can you
now.
Send, can you also find the ferrochemical one and send me that one too?
Yeah.
But
this is the page that I'm on right now.
Oof. Copy link. Okay. Yeah, so they're grouped into physical, enhancement, mental, temporal, and the god metals. So physical, there's always an external set and an internal set. So physical are iron and steel. Then you've got tin and pewter. Tin gives you... How about we just rotate through? So I'll do all the physical ones.
Sure.
And then jump down to enhancement. Okay, yeah. We'll bounce back and forth. Tin is internal, so it enhances your senses. Meanwhile, pewter enhances your like physical strength and durability. So people who can burn pewter will be able to like handle near-death experiences and awful, terrible things happening to them a little bit better.
Yeah, you're stronger overall.
Yeah.
I feel like tin eyes are kind of cool as well.
Yeah.
So with the mental metals, there's zinc and brass. So zinc and brass are emotional. They can affect your emotions. Brass, so those who can use brass are called soothers, and they can, both are essentially affecting your emotions. Brass can dampen and like, change the emotions that you're feeling or influence the emotions that you're feeling, and it tends to be more like...
So, I mean, to be fair, they both basically work the same.
Yeah.
They just have to go about things in different ways. Soothers can dampen specific emotions, so leaving room for others to rise to the surface.
Yeah.
Rioters, which is zinc burners, can flare specific emotions.
Yeah.
So they kind of... like, they can both get the same effect, they just have to go about it in different ways.
Yeah. It's, like, making an emotion stronger versus, like, tamping down the other emotions.
Yeah.
So, and then there's copper and bronze. So, copper, those who can burn copper, essentially prevent, someone who's burning copper, creates a copper cloud, which prevents sensing any of... So if someone is burning copper inside of a copper, or excuse me, words. If somebody is burning any other allomantic metal inside of a copper cloud, those who are outside of the copper cloud cannot sense them burning those metals. It's a good, like, shielding technique. So
specifically, it shields them from seekers.
Yes, which is bronze. And with bronze, they can sense allomantic metals being burnt.
As you get more and more used to it, they can basically... Yeah. Initially, they can just tell someone's burning metals that way, but as they get more used to it, they can individually figure out, okay, this is them burning this specific thing.
Yeah, and that's called piercing a copper cloud.
No, piercing a copper cloud is different. I'm just talking about...
Did you understand it? Yeah, I think I did. That's okay.
Yeah.
There's a lot of rules.
Yeah. So next, we've got the enhancement ones. Actually... I'm going to do the temporal ones because you haven't read as much of the third series yet. Have you read all the third series? Or second series, sorry.
I've read all the second series.
Okay.
Like, well, I've read all three books in it.
I'm still going to grab the temporal just because they're weird.
Yes.
So, God, this one's really weird. So these are the temporal metals. So we've got cadmium, which is a pulsar. Hang on, let me make sure that I can read this properly before I say it correctly. So, basically, a person who can burn cadmium creates a bubble around them of ultra-slow time. So, time passes incredibly... passes at a totally normal rate for them. Meanwhile, everything outside the bubble accelerates rapidly past them. Meanwhile, their alloy is... Cerebend, which just gets referred to as bend alloy. I don't remember what the other thing that goes into it is. I think it might be bismuth?
Something like that.
Yeah, it's one of the crazy, like, crystalline minerals. They are sliders, so basically they create a bubble around them where time is massively accelerated inside the bubble. One of the main characters in the second Mistborn series that we'll talk about is a slider. Mm-hmm. Then you've got Gold, which is weird. It allows you to
considered
see...
considered kind of useless a lot of the time.
It allows you to see other possible vision, possible visions of your life and other people's lives as they could have, like, led. Then that ally is Electrum, which is referred to as an oracle. This one's a bit strange because it doesn't... Sorry, oracle allows you to see possible things in your future. Mostly it just exists to counter one of the two god metals.
Yes.
Because one of the other god metals allows you to... One of the two god metals, which we'll talk about in a bit, allows someone to see and accelerates their mind enough to use the information of what's going to happen a couple of seconds in the future. Electrum basically acts as a foil to that.
Mm-hmm.
So that if two people are burning the god metal, they sort of see each other as these crazy ghostly wisps as they're trying to respond to every possible future.
I always picture it as kind of Vitruvian Man-esque.
Yeah.
That's the best image I can think of that is readily accessible to people, is the Da Vinci's Vitruvian Man, where you see like all the different positions of motion.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Electrum basically lets the person who isn't burning that god metal compete because they can still confuse the opponent, but they don't have as much of an advantage.
Yeah.
So now you can take
the enhancement metals.
Thank you. Sorry, okay. I was being dumb.
That's okay. So the enhancement metals, there's aluminum. There's aluminum and duralumin. So aluminum is kind of useless.
To be fair, aluminum burners and duralumin burners are both referred to as aluminum gnats and duralumin gnats.
Because nothing really happens when they burn their metal.
Yeah.
However, with aluminum, if a Mistborn burns aluminum, so if any I don't think we discussed Mistborns and Mistings.
Okay, yeah, let's jump on that real quick first.
Okay, because that's going to be some terminology y'all are going to need to know for this next part.
Okay, basic idea, in the world of Mistborn, you get one or all. So either you are born with a single allomantic power, which means that you are a Misting, or you are born with all of them, which means you're a Mistborn.
Yes, and that's all the metals.
Yeah, all of them are tied into being a... of noble blood. The nobles have a, basically, legitimately, the people who the Lord Ruler sort of like saw as people he could trust or who he could rely on were given this special metal to burn, which made them allomancers, and their children maintained that. And eventually the bloodlines have just sort of mixed enough that there are mistings solely because their bloodlines have weakened from breeding with people who weren't allomancers.
Yeah.
So there's a chance that you can have stuff like half-ska children who are mistings or mistborns.
Mm-hmm.
Because the bloodlines are so screwed up now.
Yes. That's also why the Canton of Orthodoxy is... one of their goals is preventing births of half-ska children.
In case they preventing find out the about allomancy, which they're not supposed to know exists.
Yeah. It's almost like an urban legend sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, allomancy is this mystical great power that none of us have or know about. And,
yeah.
So this is going to make a little bit more sense now. So with aluminum, if a Mistborn, so someone who has all of it, burns aluminum, it basically gets rid of all of their metals. It drains all their metal reserves. It's also one of the metals that is not reactive. So let's say if you can use steel or iron, you can't pull or push on that metal.
Yeah. You also don't see lines to it, so you don't have a clue if someone's trying to hit you with an aluminum bat.
Yeah. Literally, if you can visually see the bat, that's all you can see. That's that. So then the alloy of aluminum is duralumin, which is aluminum and copper. And what duralumin does is it, basically it helps you flare your metals. So it basically, it's like a bigger push of allomantic power, but it burns it up immediately as well, how aluminum does.
So
it gives you more oomph.
So it's not more oomph, it's all the oomph. So one of the issues that allomancy runs into is that basically you have a maximum burn rate. You have a maximum amount of power that you can get out of any given metal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's based on the metal itself. It's not based on anything you can do. Duralumin lets you get past that at the expense of burning all of that metal all out at once.
It always makes me think of fireworks. Like, you can burn one firework, or you burn all the fireworks.
I think it's a more accurate comparison would probably be like a sparkler that you can like hold and burn for a while, compared with like an actual firework that's going to be like big and explosive and terrifying.
Mm-hmm. So, Duralumin is useful, but again, Duralumin can really only be used in any sort of efficiency by Mistborns who have access to other metals.
So that's why both of these are referred to as gnats. And in fact, throughout the entire first Mistborn thing, pretty much the only metals that are known about are the physical metals, the mental metals, and,
one of the god metals.
One of the god metals. So they think that there are seven metals.
Yes.
And part of the main character's whole thing is that, or not the main character, sorry, a character's whole thing is that he's found the mystical eighth metal that he can use to somehow defeat the Lord Ruler.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the other two, so I haven't actually had, I'm trying to remember which books use these two metals.
I think our original plan was basically to talk about pre-Katasandra and post-Katasandra. I think what it's going to end up being is actually that this first episode is going to be talking about allomancy, and next episode is going to be talking about ferrochemy.
Yeah.
And probably hemallergy, because hemallergy
is kind of gross. Yeah.
Hemallergy also just has a little bit less to it.
Yes.
Okay.
So the last two of the enhancement metals are chromium and nigrosil. I'm reading this off because this is one of the ones that you don't see as often. So chromium destroys another allomancer's metals like aluminum does to oneself. So someone who is burning chromium can touch someone who is burning any other metal and all their metals are gone. They can't use it anymore. It's basically like someone has used aluminum.
It basically is mostly used by police who are... there's a thing that happens in between Mistborn... the Mistborn series and the second Mistborn series, which is referred to as the Katasandra. We are still up for debate about what the heck we think that actually means.
Because you break it down into like the roots and the words that make up the word Katasandra, but
there is a the world is coming to the end, coming to an end at the as you get near the end of the third book.
And something has happened in the second book to essentially accelerate the end of the world.
Yes. And by the end of the third book, it's pretty much happening, and someone is trying desperately to fix it,
mm-hmm.
and ends up largely fixing it and creating this new, theoretically better world for everyone else.
Yeah.
But yeah, this basically appears post-Katasandra once they start to learn more and realize that, okay, so yeah, those god medals don't really count. There are 16 medals because 16 is this recurring theme that happens
mm-hmm.
everywhere.
Yes.
So, and the other one being Nigrosil.
Nigrosil.
Does the same thing as Duralumin.
Mm-hmm.
It's someone can burn Nigrosil, touch someone else, and it lets them act as though they are burning Duralumin. And whatever their metal is.
Yes.
it is
a lot, like we said, this is one of those things where there's a lot of rules as to how it can be used and who can use it.
Yeah. And then there's the two god medals. So this is where we're going to start to get into the crazy Cosmere stuff. So there are two god medals. Atium and Larassium. So Atium is this insane metal that everyone... who's a Mistborn desperately wants, because when you're burning mm-hmm. Atium, this is the one where you can see what everyone and everything around you is going to be doing. So it basically turns you into the perfect killing machine and gives you the mental fortitude and quickness to deal with seeing through time, basically.
Yeah.
Laracium is what created Allomancers.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where we start getting into the crazy Cosmere stuff, because with every Cosmere world, there are requirements that someone has to go through in order to gain whatever that system's magic is. And pretty much all of them, because Brandon Sanderson is a little bit evil like this, usually have to have something to do with the person who's getting this power being broken down or destroyed in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually we'll talk about the Stormlight Archive once I get Miriam to read them, but the people who gain powers in the Stormlight Archive have to be mentally damaged human beings in order, basically for the power to leap through the different realms that it has to get to reach them, they have to be mentally broken, and the mm-hmm. power fills in those gaps. The Allomancy does pretty much the same thing in Mistborn. You have to have what's it referred to as? It's not a split.
It's not sparking, but it is. What is it called?
It's sort of similar to having a planeswalker spark ignite.
Snapping. It's called snapping.
Snapping, yes.
It's not breaking, it's snapping.
Yeah. Basically, it's a little bit mental, it's more physical, is the person has to believe that they're about to die. Mm-hmm. And usually the best way to do that is that nobles would beat their children.
They would essentially schedule their children to be beaten nearly to death. Not to death, but nearly to death.
Yeah.
To snap into your allomantic abilities.
And basically, the first nobles consumed Laracium and saw this pool of power that when they burned, the pool of power went away, but they gained the ability to burn all the other metals.
Mm-hmm.
And they're able to pass that down genetically, but all of their children and every children after that had to be snapped in some way. Because these god metals are literally the remains, the physical remains of two what effectively were deities.
Yeah. Laracium is the body of... Oh, okay.
Preservation.
I was going to say, how far can we go with this before it's a spoiler?
We are definitely in hard spoiler territory now.
Yeah.
And this is also
spoilers.
Explaining the whole Cosmere concept, because the whole thing about the Cosmere is that effectively, Brandon Sanderson went out and said, okay, for a world in my universe to have magic, a shard needs to have lived or currently live on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, the world of Mistborn was a, he's got a word for it and I don't remember what it was. It was a two-shard world. Basically, this being, at one point known as Adenalsium, we know nothing about him besides that he or it was Adenalsium, and 16 people came and either killed him or finished killing him or did something, and each one of them picked up a chunk of his power and went their separate ways.
Mm-hmm.
Two people whose names I think have been largely lost picked up the Shard of Preservation and the Shard of Ruin.
Yes.
They came to, because pretty much all of these people then went off to their own worlds to just make stuff. So they came to the world of Skadriel, and because of their specific powers, neither of them could create something wholly from, nothing. So they had to work together. So they made life on Skadriel. They made it out of the basic human image, which is why apparently the Ska and the nobles used to look very different from each other, but that was also a separation that happened after this for the sake of confusion. But basically, these two came down and they agreed, okay, we'll make this thing because Preservation wants to make something.
Something that can think.
And Ruin wants to be able to destroy something that can think and reason.
Mm-hmm.
So they got together and made something. They made all life on Skadriel.
Yes.
Largely out of their own original image, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ruin was just like, okay, we made him. Now I get to destroy him, right? It's like, no,
it's like,
no.
In a period of time, then you can destroy them, destroy the world.
So what ended up basically happening is that the two of them matched each other perfectly in strength and power, so every time one of them would try and do something, the other one would immediately prevent it, or would prevent it with, like, a very minor, like, splash over. So it was like, Ruin would try and open a giant hole to eat a city, and what would actually just end up happening is that Preservation would stop him and it would just be a little earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, they didn't so much come to an impasse as, Ruin. They ended up making a deal. They ended up sort of divesting their powers down different paths to try and trick each other.
Yeah.
So I don't remember how exactly it went about, but basically Preservation managed to separate Ruin's body from his power. So his body became Atium, which just sort of got trapped on Skadrill. And whenever someone would, like, burn some of it, it just returns to the pits, basically. There's just a place where someone buried Ruin's body that just bits of his body keep surfacing and trying to escape. And they mine it and try and prevent people from burning it, because if they burn it, then it goes back into the pits.
But it's also this, like, super powerful higher metal.
Yeah.
Like, its ability is really useful. So it's basically like this, it's like the economic scarcity is essentially what it is. So if there's a scarcity of something,
there's some weird extra stuff with it too, just because not as much of it was coming in that a bunch of people thought. So it was weird, but and effectively, Preservation managed to seal Ruin's power. And Ruin started, Ruin had very limited power out in the outside world. Most of his power basically just amounted to being able to talk to people that were using his version of magic.
Yes.
His version being Hemalurgy, which we'll go into next episode.
Yes.
And because of that, he really had very little power. But one thing that he could screw with was anything that wasn't written in metal. So, like, books and stories and songs and anything written down, he slowly started twisting and shaping until they all made it sound like the power of Preservation, which was basically this mist that would come down, and it looked like Preservation. This part's where it gets weird. Basically, there was a mist that was slowly choking out all of the planet, which may or may not have been ruined, it's hard to tell. He started pushing this thing that was like the Hero of Ages, who was this person who would go to the Well of Ascension, which was a thing that everyone just like knew about.
It was like a legend.
Yeah, it was a legend, and people sort of knew where it was, but it was a legend, so they would just go off towards... eventually, someone was convinced that they were the Hero of Ages. And that they needed to go to the Well of Ascension once all the power had gathered there. It was Preservation's power that basically he would give to a mortal to try and make the world better.
Work in his name.
Yeah. And all they had to do was take the power and choose to not use it for themselves.
And just release it back into the world.
And it became more and more clear that, oh, that's literally just how you unlock Ruin's prison.
Yeah, that's literally... So what happens is Ruin gets out.
Yeah. The first time that someone tries to do this, the person who was the Hero of Ages doesn't realize, and his helper, who would... a man named...
Rashik.
Rashik, thank you. I knew it was an R. A man named Rashik, a Terraceman, who is a... at this time, this was before Alamancer. Yeah, he was his Sherpa.
It's like heading up to Everest with a Sherpa. Yeah.
He was not an Allomancer. This was before Allomancy was a thing, but he was a ferrochemist. Started to realize what was actually going on and killed Elodie, the first Hero of Ages.
Elendi.
Before he reached the...
Well of Ascension.
Yeah, before he reached the Well of Ascension and could accidentally release whatever this awful power is. So instead, Rashik tried to use Preservation's power, but without Preservation to help guide him to, like, fix the planet. This is how it got extra screwed up.
Basically, it's he tried to fix it without any knowledge of what was actually happening.
Yeah. And, but he used the power instead of releasing it, so Ruin wasn't released. At this point, he also figured out kind of what was going on and went, oh god, and had these pieces, the Well of Ascension was then sort of like surrounded by these little pottery shards, each of which had a single piece of metal in it of Laracium, which he used to make Allomancers to help him deal with Ruin and deal with all of everything else. And he basically just went, okay, now that I have Allomancy, I'm going to figure out a way to survive for 1,000 years while Preservation's power comes back, and then I'm going to fix everything because I'll have 1,000 years to study. How he lived for 1,000 years, we'll have to get into Ferrochemy to talk about.
Yeah.
But basically, he spends the next 1,000 years learning pretty much all the stuff that we're going to talk about. Like, it's sort of implied that he knew about most of the metals, if not all of them. At some point, he started to figure out that Ruin was able to see and change written documents, so he started carving things into metal.
Like, important things that needed to be known.
Yeah. Anything that he thought needed to be kept for future generations. He was also insanely arrogant, let's say, and didn't think he could die.
Yeah.
So when someone else managed to kill him, basically all of his plans were just like, if you're reading this and I'm not there, then you're probably boned anyway. So I haven't actually planned that much out.
It's like I'm still working on this plan.
I'm still working on this plan, and if you're reading this and I'm not there, then you killed me, so good job. We're probably all gonna die anyway.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So, Allomancy is complicated.
It's very complicated, but the basic idea is that you have an amount of metal, and you can use... Some people might be a little bit better with one or the other, but yeah, you burn it, and you get an effect. That's the sort of idea behind Allomancy, is that it is... You put X in, you always get Y out. There's no change. It is an equivalent... Well, it's an equivalent formula wherein X amount of... product always results in Y amount of output.
Power.
Yeah.
Or, I guess not power, but ability.
Yeah.
That's probably a better way of saying it than power.
Yeah, it's basically, Allomancy doesn't depend on the person using it in any way. They're basically just a conduit for a power.
That is exactly how I would have put it.
They personally can choose to use it in different ways, but what the result is not based on them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, there's certain things that, like, if you can burn pewter, it helps to be a strong individual, but it doesn't...
But at the same time...
You don't have to be a strong individual.
Yeah, two people who are burning pewter are going to be, even if one of them, in fact, this is actually a thing, and I think the second book?
Yeah, it's like the beginning of the book. Yeah, there's basically a thing where
two people who are burning pewter, and you can flare a metal to basically burn the maximum amount
more
of it.
More of it, yeah.
Two people who are flaring pewter, even if one of them is like a short, scrawny, but tough little girl, and the other one is a big, bulky bruiser dude, they're basically going to be, if not exactly as strong, they'll both be just as durable.
Like think acrobat build versus like weightlifter build.
Yeah. They probably won't be as strong, but they will be very, very close because pewter will effectively level out their playing field.
Yeah.
But they will be just as durable.
Mm-hmm.
So, no matter what, there's no way to get more out of your Allomancy. Like, the only one that even cares remotely about your physical body is stuff like the iron ones, because their power comes directly from their weight.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a little thing about it.
It's one of those, like, it's every reaction has an equal opposite reaction kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which, that little nugget in there, I'm like, yes, you can't just do anything you want. You have to, if you're gonna pull something.
You have to pay respect to physics.
Yes, physics exists. You can't just, like, fly about like you have wings. It's no.
Yeah.
You have to think about the arc that you're making. If you're pushing off of, if you're a coin shot pushing off of something, you have to think of your arc that you're doing.
There's a character post Katasandra who's basically, he's a steel misting, and he's talking about how much freer that is, because as a coin shot, you can basically, like, launch yourself into the air. Meanwhile, a lurcher who wants to get around basically has to go, like, that's the highest point I think I can reach without dying, and whoop!
Yank on it.
Yank yourself straight up into the air, and then try and sort of, like, yank on multiple points in different directions at the same time to sort of, like, balance yourself out.
I always think it's straight lines versus a parabola.
Yeah. Or at one point he basically describes it as, if a lurcher wants to get up a building, they basically have to keep an eye out for things like metal gargoyles or stuff that's hanging over the side, or else they sort of have to, like, try and grab onto the top of the building and sort of, like, shuffle their way up the top.
Yeah.
And hope that they don't lose their metal or anything and just fall to their deaths.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, he's just talking about how much more fun it is to be a coin shot than a lurcher.
Yes. So let me think. Is there anything else that we need to...
Just to be clear, in case it's not obvious, each one of these powers has a direct tie to one of the shards. So Allomancy is Preservation Shard. Because it's a zero-sum feels like the wrong thing, but basically, like, you put X in, you always get Y out thing. Mm-hmm. There's no
decay.
Yeah, there's no decay, and there's no change.
Yeah.
When we get to the other two powers, there's both decay and change. One of them has change because it comes from both of them. The other one has just straight-up decay because it just comes from ruin.
Yes.
This is a thing that, as you look at other Brandon Sanderson worlds, all of his magic systems tend to have similar things. Like,
there's a balance element.
Yeah, like, Stormlight Archive has three different magic systems, all of which is tied to different shards that do very, very different things. And some of them get extra weird because as you get more and more into it, it looks more like different shards actually went, hey, you know that magic system I invented? Screw that. I like this one you made. I'm going to take it and make it better. And then the other shard ends up going, well, okay, then I guess I'm going to fix your broken one. Like, there's just interesting stuff.
I haven't read them
like
yet,
that.
So I have nothing to add.
It's
next on my reading list.
Yeah. I mean, so to be clear, some of the other books in the Cosmere are Warbreaker, which is a... Warbreaker's so weird. Warbreaker is basically like a... I don't even want to say it's like a Beauty and the Beast-style romance, but that's sort of the impression you get at the beginning. But the magic system there is based on color, sort of. It's based on two things, but color is the big main element.
Okay.
Then you've got, what's it called? I think the world is called Cell? I'm trying to remember. His first book, which is, it looks like Atlantis, but it's not. Sorry, I have to go to my Audible account to remember the names of these books. Because it's been a bit. My library, yes. Do-do-do-do-do. Brandon Sanderson.
He has so many books.
He does. Okay, yeah, so there's Warbreaker. What's the other one? Elantris. Elantris is weird because, and in fact, I think at the book that you... So in the second Mistborn series, you also start to get people who are not from Skadriel involved. They're very, like, off to the side, but you get some of their commentary and weird stuff like that. And one of them mentions that, Elantris has a, very, very different magic system because their magic system is entirely form-based.
Sorry, the face I just made is, I'm on his site right now, and I realized I've read other stuff by him, but I didn't realize it was him.
I know that...
That would explain why I really liked the... Okay.
Wait, I know that...
the magic series. The magic in it.
What series?
The Rhythmatist.
Yes, he did The Rhythmatist.
That sounds really familiar, and so, I click on it. Oh, I've totally read this!
So, Rhythmatist is not a Cosmere series.
No.
There's a series whose name is now entirely escaping me about superpowers that he does. I think that one's not done yet. I don't remember the name of that one.
There's something called Alcatraz versus the Evil Librarians, which sounds
Yeah, I know nothing
silly.
About that one. He basically has silly. An alternating schedule of like his adult Cosmere books and his more like young adult child books that all still generally use unique and interesting magic systems.
Huh. That's cool.
But yeah, he's got... This is the whole thing, is that once you start looking into all of the different parts of the Cosmere, it just gets weirder.
It makes me think almost... I'm feeling very Terry Pratchett-esque right now.
Yeah.
Where there's so many things to start with.
You remember how this was going to be a short episode?
This is not a short episode anymore.
Because I have to stream in half an hour.
We might have to, like, break these in, like...
I don't think I'm going to break this one up. We're just going to go, like, we might miss a week because we spent way too long talking about just Allomancy.
It's such a cool thing, though.
Check back in 2 weeks, I guess, because we'll... Unless we can manage to find a recording date while I'm in Burbank, we'll see. Because we'll be talking about Ferrochemie, and hopefully we'll be not stupid and manage to also include Hemallergy. The one issue is that Hemallergy has really broad ramifications for the rest of the Cosmere.
You know what, though? This actually will work okay, because we haven't talked about the Terrace yet.
Yeah, so we'll have to talk... The Terrace are where Hemallergy comes from, but yeah, we'll have to talk about that, yeah.
Perfect. It's like the Terrace episode.
Yeah.
We've got Ferrochemie, Hemallergy, and the Terrace people.
Oh, goodness. So, yes.
God, this is
with that, again, I'm so sorry for anyone who was introduced to us by the Magic website. We do cover Magic a lot, but we also try and cover things that aren't Magic the Gathering, because we like a lot of fantasy stuff, because we're nerds.
This is the first time we've done this, though.
Yes, but you also ran sort of a secondary series as well, so...
Yeah. This is true.
If you would like to see more of the stuff we do, not just the podcast, you can find everything that we do at layeroflore.com. Most of what we do right now is streams. We stream a lot. Mostly I stream a lot. Miriam and my wife have an upcoming show that they're going to be recording, where they will be playing mostly dating games.
It's called Mixed Signals. It's going to be fun.
Yes. They're going to be opening up with Monster Prom and eventually Dream Daddy. And when it comes out, and I'm going to be joining them for this because I really, really want to play it. Boyfriend Dungeon. There we go. I couldn't remember the name for a second. Yeah, Boyfriend Dungeon.
Yeah.
Those will air first on our Twitch channel. And then they'll go live for our patron. They'll go live for our patrons. Then they'll air on Twitch, and then they'll go out to our YouTube subscribers as well. Mm-hmm. Haley has got a series that she's now recorded something like 9 episodes of that doesn't have a thing yet, like a basic template for the thumbnail. So I don't have any of them up yet. Called the Builder Express. All of our currently planned show names have train themes, in case that's not clear.
Long-running joke, watch our other stuff and find out why.
Maybe don't watch most of our older stuff. Actually, no, just don't watch any of our older stuff. It's fine. It's fine. We'll explain it to you. We will be happy to explain, because some of our older stuff is dumb. But yes, mostly we stream. So Mondays and Tuesdays, I stream a Pokemon Nuzlocke, which, if you don't know, is Pokemon hard mode, basically permadeath, and limits on what you can catch. And on the rest of the week, we stream an assortment of other stuff. I'm not giving you times, because I'm going away for a week, and when I come back, we're planning on redoing our schedule. So...
Keep it fresh.
Yeah. Well, let's keep it fresh and more so that, because this is my job right now, is I am a content producer. If you would like to support me, you could do that on Twitch or on Patreon, patreon.com/layerofLore. While I'm doing that, I'm also trying to be a halfway decent house husband, so basically we're trying to set it up so that I can take a break in the middle and set videos to render so that patrons don't have to wait a while, and also so I can do stuff like laundry and dishes and making dinner. So, yeah. That's largely why that change is actually going into place. But, But yeah, if you want to support us on Patreon, you can get access to silly stuff like the Extra Bits, which is our pre- and post-shows, as well as, on occasion, the pre- and post-shows for our D&D sessions, even if the D&D session doesn't fire, because that's happened a few times.
Yeah. That's what we do on Saturdays. Yep. D&D. Or any, it's like, roleplay games.
We're about to wrap up D&D, and we'll be moving on to a new system.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be moving on to Dark Heresy, which, again, 40K, it's silly and wonderful. No one should actually describe 40K as silly, but I am deeply, deeply disturbed.
What else?
I think that's pretty much it. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. They're both Layer of Lore. You can find pretty much everything down in our show notes. Hey, if you haven't seen yet, we have really complete show notes. It'll have, like, links to all the cards that we talked about, and this... Allomancy chart that we've been referring back to. Mm-hmm. So, hey, consider checking out the show notes. They've actually got a lot of information in them. Miriam, do you want me to add your Twitter to the show notes, or are you going to continue not actually
using
it?
I downloaded Twitter. I might as well actually use it.
Good, good.
I'm just, I believe I'm just Madcap Mim, like I am everywhere else.
I believe so, but I forgot to grab your name when you liked the thing about us being on the front page.
Yeah, so if you found us there... Thanks for joining us.
Sorry that we didn't talk about magic, but... Oh, yeah, there you are. Your Madcap Mim right there.
Mm-hmm. Makes it easy.
There.
If you want to email us, you can find us at masterminds@layerofLore.com, correct?
Again, yes, that's totally also in our show notes.
It's all there.
Yeah, that's pretty that's much everything. About it. Thank you all very much for tuning in, and we'll see you... next week, if we can manage to record while I'm out of town. If not, we'll figure something out. I'm sorry we might miss a week because we went way longer than expected.
Yes.
Thank you all, and we'll see you soon.
Bye.
Bye.